This podcast is presented by Celery.com, the one-stop shop e-commerce logistics provider.
So we went to our local pet store, brought back every kind of insects we could get our hands on, and just started frying them up, trying to feed them to our friends, not having much success early on. Because, I mean, I think it comes down to American food culture. Like, we don't eat whole cows, we don't eat whole pigs. When you bring someone a whole insect and ask them to eat it, right now, Americans don't usually see insects as food. And so that's what we've been working on these last 3+ years, is that question of, what is it that will take Americans from seeing insects as a pest to seeing them as a delicious food source like much of the world already does?
Welcome to Celery Talks. This is a show that features ideas and the stories that are behind them. And I'm your host, Tad Kelsey. Celery Talks tells the stories of business ideas and the people that made them happen. When craving a snack with protein, we don't necessarily think of chips or cookies first. And if you're an American, you most likely don't pull crickets from the pantry. Three Harvard graduates, Laura D'Assaro, Rose Wang, and Meryl Natal, are trying to change that. Crickets are high in protein, easily sourced, and can be ground into flour form. This trio of entrepreneurs are offering crickets in tasty forms such as barbecue chips and chocolate chip cookies. In the process, they are trying to create a revolution in the American food culture. Laura, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Who is Chirps? Tell us about your product.
So Chirps is our brand, and what we do is we get people excited about eating insects.
What are the forms that these insects are eaten in?
It's a great question. So that's actually kind of key to what we do. So I think when you think of eating insects, you know, you think of whole insects. And kind of our mission is, how do we put insects into a form that actually gets people over those ideas of disgust or fear and makes them want to eat them? And so what we do is we work mainly with crickets for right now. And we make something called cricket powder, cricket protein powder, which is just crickets dried and milled into a powder. So it looks just like a whole wheat flour, basically. And we put them into our main product, which are Chirps chips. They're a high protein tortilla chip. You can do anything with cricket flour. So right now around the holidays, we're doing a lot of stuff with cookies, for example. You can bake with it. We sell the flour itself, or the protein powder flour.
Two things I appreciate about Chirps is, when you eat them, you don't know that you're eating crickets, because it's very tasty, whether it's the cookies or the chips. And then the other thing is, I'm allergic to gluten, so I appreciate that they're all gluten-free.
True.
Well, let's go farther back before Chirps. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I was born and raised in Seattle, Washington.
What did life in Seattle contribute to who you are today?
I mean, I think as anyone, part of it's the city and part of it's the family that you grow up in. So I grew up in a kind of hippie-ish family, really into the outdoors, that kind of thing. So, you know, I interacted, I think, a lot growing up with insects, hiking and all that kind of thing. So I was never super afraid of them. My mom always takes the spiders and gently puts them outside. So I think, you know, having that upbringing and then kind of getting into insects, I think I didn't have as much of an initial fear around it, and definitely a lot of a family that supported creativity and projects. Like, our house was always full of various projects. My brothers always loved fixing things, and my dad's a physicist, so he was always working on some kind of experiment. He does oceanography, like oceanographic experiments, and he's a physical oceanographer, so looking more at the climate and tides and oceanic mixing rather than animals. So, you know, this kind of idea of entrepreneurship and projects was a lot of what we did just growing up in our house.
So that leads into my next question. Have you always been entrepreneurial? Is that something that you noticed early on as an interest?
You know, it was interesting. So I have an older brother who's on the autism spectrum, and often with that comes some kind of talent or specific interest. And so his interest was always fixing things. So from the time that he was, one or two before I was born, all he wanted to do was fix things, take things apart. By the time that he was really, 3 or 4, he could fix our dishwasher. You know, a lot of my memories growing up were being with him and someone's car would be broken or microwave or camera. And here's this, you know, 7-year-old kid fixing it. You know, he always had his specific interests and my dad being a physicist always had his. And I was kind of spending my childhood figuring out what my interest was because it wasn't like my family where it was something super specific. But I always loved projects. I have always had the ability to get really into something and sit there for hours and hours working on it. I mean, as a kid, it was like arts and crafts or like a writing project or that kind of thing. But I think it wasn't until I was 15 that I ever really thought about entrepreneurship. So when I was 15, I was down in my local playground. Local park had a place that I basically grew up around. It had like a bike path and then it led down to this playground. And over the years, the playground equipment had gotten super run down. And by the time I was 15, there wasn't much left. It was basically an empty sand lot. So I was down there with my friend. We were just looking around and we're like, I wonder, like maybe there's something we can do to bring back a couple little toys or something because we knew the parks department didn't have any money. So what we did was we set up a lemonade stand on that bike path. And for an entire summer, I sat out there and sold lemonade and cookies and got other local kids involved and other neighbors. And by the end of the summer, we raised $14,000 and we built a new playground. And it was this crazy feeling of realizing that as a 15-year-old, I could make a difference in the world. And that was the first time I heard the word entrepreneur. Someone said that I was a social entrepreneur and it just clicked. It was like a light bulb. It was like, this is what I am and like what I want to do for the rest of my life.
14K in just a few months. That's pretty impressive.
It was insane. I mean, coming home every day, dumping out dollar bills on the living room floor. My mom was like, we got to take this to the bank.
Okay, so where and how did you meet your co-founders, Rose and Merrill?
Fast forward to college. So kind of coming out of this whole idea of wanting to do social entrepreneurship, I got really involved in the nonprofit world, became an African studies major at Harvard. And meanwhile, freshman year, Rose, my now co-founder, lived across the hall from us. And so I knew her early on from just even freshman year, but she was always way more interested in business. Like she helped run the Harvard cleaners and the Harvard shop that sold the gear that said, you know, Harvard shirts and Harvard sweatpants and all of that. And so, you know, we knew each other, but we weren't close friends because, you know, I was out to change the world and, you know, she was doing corporate business. And so we kind of had different interests. But we came together really towards the end of college. This was because we both had separate experiences eating insects abroad. So as an African studies major, how I first ate a bug was that I was in rural Tanzania and outside of the United States, especially in a lot of these rural areas, eating insects is pretty common. So I met this street vendor selling fried caterpillars. And I was kind of like, do I eat this? Do I try this? I grew up mostly vegetarian. And I was like, is this vegetarian? Anyway, all these thoughts running through my head. But eventually I was like, I have to try this. So I bought one, bit down, and my first thought was, this tastes like lobster. Like it wasn't ooey or gooey or, you know, any of the worries that I had about insects. It was really good. And so I got back to the United States and just started researching eating insects. And, you know, you just do a quick Google search and you find out all these incredible facts about insects, about how sustainable they are. For example, it takes 2,000 gallons of water to make a pound of beef and only 1 gallon of water to make a pound of crickets, as well as all the health benefits. I mean, basically, these are a super sustainable superfood, really high in protein, low in fat, full of all the good amino acids. And so I got really excited about this. And I wanted to start something around this, but I'd spent most of my years at college doing African studies, being in the nonprofit world, and didn't know about business. And so that's why I sent an article to my college roommate, Rose, about eating insects. And I think she would have thought I was crazy. She, you know, you mentioned the Seattle thing. She always describes it as, you know, Laura's from Seattle, meaning that I send her all sorts of crazy articles about things. But she had just gotten back from China that summer where someone had dared her to eat a fried scorpion. And she'd had a pretty similar reaction to me. She thought hers tasted like fried shrimp. And so we both had these positive insect eating experiences abroad. So we basically came back and just started trying to figure out how do we get Americans to eat insects. So we went to our local pet store, brought back every kind of insects we could get our hands on and just started frying them up, trying to feed them to our friends. not having much success early on because, I mean, I think it comes down to American food culture. Like, we don't eat whole cows, we don't eat whole pigs. When you bring someone a whole insect and ask them to eat it, right now, Americans don't usually see insects as food. And so that's what we've been working on these last 3+ years is that question of what is it that will take Americans from seeing insects as a pest to seeing them as a delicious food source like much of the world already does. Let me back up and explain a little bit about Meryl. So Meryl is a designer, and she's always, like, at Harvard, made incredible designs. And so when Rose and I started working on this project, we didn't have any kind of ability in terms of that arena. And I think a lot of convincing people to eat something new is, how do you package this into something that looks appealing, looks exciting, makes people want to eat it? And that's kind of where Meryl came in.
Was there a light bulb moment? I mean, you go to Tanzania, you eat bugs, you're like, Rose, you got to try this. And then while she's abroad, she also tries them, correct?
Yeah.
And then where was that light bulb moment where you're like, you know what, let's actually make this into a snack and start a business?
I mean, it was really when we started doing the research, like, you know, came back and we're reading the articles about it. And I just remember feeling like I couldn't breathe for those first couple of months because it just made so much sense. Like, here was a food that was eaten all over the world already by people who loved it, tasted good, was super nutritious and super sustainable, and yet we weren't eating it. Like, it just seemed like a no-brainer. It was just changing people's habits around it that could make all the difference. And so, yeah, those first couple of months were challenging in that, you know, we were trying lots of things that weren't working. We were trying to feed people whole worms and making, you know, grasshopper cookies and all sorts of things. But the logic behind it was just, there was so much energy there, which kept us going.
What was the next step? Where did you source the crickets from?
So, well, early on, we basically got crickets live and whole, and then we'd freeze them and roast them and then mill them into the powder ourselves. Now that's not the case. Pretty soon after, there became a lot better supply of cricket flour. So we get our crickets now from cricket farms. And cricket farming's been around for a long time, at least in the United States, for fish bait or for your pet lizard. And so the infrastructure was already there. And so the farm started basically sectioning off another area, making crickets specifically for human consumption. And so we started buying from the farms who actually would make the cricket powder themselves.
Who was the first person that tried Chirps outside of you three, and what did they think?
This was right when Rose and I were graduating. So after we graduated, we moved into a co-op, a couple of them. In Boston, it was this entrepreneurship co-op. It was like 20 people. And then in San Francisco, a 70-person co-op. So, like, those were probably the people that we did our most testing on. But, like, I guess even before that, it was just people around the college campus. I mean, if any of these communities you work in, you just kind of go up to people and try it out on people in the dining hall or, you know, at an event. So, I don't remember specifically, but bunch of college students were definitely our test subjects. We always surround ourselves by these communities because, you know, when you're trying out new food products, it's so helpful to have people trying what you're doing, or even if it's not food. Like, we were always pretty open about what we were doing, and people gave pretty honest feedback. You know, you can kind of tell from someone's expression whether or not they like something.
That makes me think just about how, you know, you get someone who goes into an industry like food and beverage, and you're making something that is a classic favorite. You're just trying to do it high quality, make it taste great, maybe have a unique experience that people want to come back and keep trying your food. Predictability is involved. But for you, it's got to be so exciting. You're doing something, it's not only food, you've got to make it taste good, got to be unique, but inherent in what you're doing is just unique. And you're really trying to change a culture's palate. That's got to be really energizing to do what you get to do.
You're definitely right about that. I think one thing that keeps us going is it never really gets old changing people's minds. So having somebody come in and be like, bugs, and then try our product, and that expression change, the realization on their face that you can eat bugs and that bugs are delicious, that's fantastic. And they walk away from that day having their minds blown a little bit about just the way that the world works and what's possible.
Okay, so then when was Chirps founded and how did it officially launch?
We started this at the end of 2013, but it took us a long time until we actually had a product. So we launched our Kickstarter in the spring of 2014, and that's really when anything started really coming together. Because before then, it was us, you know, in a dorm room trying to feed our friends whole bugs from Petco. So yeah, spring of 2014, trying to figure out what, you know, how to actually make this product. Because before then, we didn't have any funding. And then from our Kickstarter, we raised $70,000. And this started to look a lot more like a real company.
When did you know people wanted what Chirps had to offer?
Definitely. And that was a big question. Like, we had this idea that insects were this food of the future, but we weren't sure if anyone else was going to eat them, right? And so I'd say the Kickstarter campaign was really when it went from this idea and kind of this project to something that we were going to make our full-time jobs, our lives. We basically, when we launched our Kickstarter campaign, it went pretty viral. So we ended up on the front page of Yahoo. And I remember at the end of an article they wrote, there was a survey and it was, would you eat chips with bugs in them? And over 30,000 people took the survey and 51% of them said yes. And that was huge, meaning, you know, 51% of a pretty general population was open to this idea of eating bug chips. And that was kind of the validation that we needed, that this, you know, early on when we'd been trying to feed people whole bugs and it wasn't working, that didn't mean people wouldn't eat bugs. It was just that we had to get the form right. So one example we like to talk about is sushi. If I asked you if you'd eat sea urchin, for example, I think people might have a pretty similar reaction to insects. But sushi, for example, is really popular and it all comes down to the form.
After the Kickstarter campaign, what led to getting on Shark Tank?
So the way that Shark Tank works is they go to various cities and just have open auditions. But a friend basically just said, you should do it and dared us to do it. And so we showed up at an open audition, walked in, you get to basically pitch for a minute. So we pitched our product and we got a call back. And so we filled out all this paperwork and worked through the process. And last September, we found ourselves down in Culver City filming for the show.
So when you get the call back, is at the end of the process, they say, you know, hey, we've selected you, we'd like you to be on the show, or are there any other steps that you had to go through?
Yeah, no, it's a pretty long process. So, you know, you start out doing the audition and then you fill out all this paperwork and then you talk to producers and people are cut, you know, every step of the way. You know, it was, gosh, a 4-month process or so going back and forth. And every moment we just assumed that we'd be cut, but, you know, we never were. And then it was just a couple of weeks until we'd actually go down there. And we were then working on pitches and figuring out what, you know, learning a little bit more about what we'd actually be doing on set. But yeah, we weren't totally sure we'd be airing or, you know, on the show until a couple of weeks before.
Tell me about the show. Were you nervous about the pitch?
I mean, how can you not be nervous, right? Like, you're on national television. This is like the biggest chance of your life, especially, you know, for us, where our mission was to get in front of so many people and educate them about this idea that insects are food. You know, sometimes I feel like when we watch people react to this, that we're telling them their whole life something like pencils were edible and they didn't know. You know, so yeah, you know, we were definitely nervous. We practiced a ton. We binge watched Shark Tank. You know, but ultimately, you can only prepare so much for something that you've never done like that and where there's so much pressure.
How has Shark Tank impacted your company?
Yeah. So what happened on Shark Tank was that we got investment from Mark Cuban. That was huge. And it really wasn't because of the money. It was a bit of the legitimacy around it all, right? So what we get a lot when we tell people what we do and about eating insects is kind of this skepticism that, like, yeah, that'll never work. Being able to have that legitimacy that we got funding from Shark Tank and that Mark Cuban invested, you know, it's at least this idea that, well, if Mark Cuban invested, these guys aren't totally crazy. And so that was our first investment. And since then, we've been able to raise more, been able to have connections. Basically, the way it works is that, at least with Mark Cuban, you get put into kind of like, I don't know, an incubator a little bit. He's got a whole team that you continue to work with, and they've helped us redo our website, helped us with Amazon. So that's amazing, not to mention just the exposure. It's really cool to meet people who will ask, like, oh, I saw you guys on Shark Tank. You know, was that you? So all of that put together has, you know, been an experience of a lifetime.
How have you been getting the word out about Chirps other than the Kickstarter campaign and Shark Tank?
Definitely. So, you know, I think we're a pretty unique company, and we try to carry a lot of those values into everything we do. So we're always looking for unique opportunities. And I think kind of a fun marketing example is that we actually made the world's largest nachos earlier this year. So kind of the backstory to this all was that we work a lot with kids. We work a lot with schools and summer camps. And last summer, we had a summer camp order 10,000 pounds of Chirps for all their summer camp activities. And this was awesome, but they only ended up using 8,000 of the 10,000 pounds. They overordered a little bit. And so we had 2,000 pounds of chips that had already been paid for sitting in our warehouse in like big bulk bags. So we couldn't really resell them. And so we're like, what do we do with 2,000 pounds of Chirps? And so we looked up the world record for the largest nachos, and it was like around 4,800 pounds or so. So we're like, we can totally do this. And so we got together and kind of had this big event in San Francisco where we invited the whole city to this big nacho party. And so that was a ton of fun. Like, we had music, we had events, we brought in entomologists to have like a little bug zoo. And it was just a great way to interact with the community and get people eating and talking about insects.
You have been the biggest buyers of Chirps.
We are still a food brand. And so even in this day and age of digital everything, grocery stores are still the place that people are mainly going. So we're in about 400 stores around the country. You can check out our store locator. There may be one near you. So definitely stores. We also do a lot with zoos and museums because we do stuff around education. So a lot of the science centers and museums and that kind of thing carry Chirps in their gift shop. In addition, I mentioned kids. So we get a lot of interest from teachers, summer camps, that kind of thing, and do a bit around education. We have some curriculum and resources for people who want to teach about eating insects. One other place is we do sell them in gyms. Rock climbing is really big here in San Francisco. So we do sell Chirps at a lot of rock climbing gyms, for example. It's usually places where people are either kids or millennials, because, you know, you're not going to probably get your 70-year-old grandmother to eat insects, just because the longer we live on this earth, the more kind of ideas we have about the food we eat or the way the world works. But with kids and people up, you know, into their 30s, people are still a lot more open to trying new things.
What has happened that you didn't expect to happen?
It's been pretty incredible seeing, after, you know, 3+ years, the difference just in terms of education around eating insects. 3 years ago, if I talked to a random person on the street about eating insects, they looked at me like I was crazy, right? And now I talk to a random person and there's a good chance that they have already heard about it, like read an article, even tried something with insects. And that palpable difference, I mean, is kind of what I didn't expect. I mean, you know, we didn't expect to have such a successful Kickstarter campaign. We didn't expect to be on Shark Tank. If I knew when we started this kind of where we'd be at now, definitely not what I expected. But kind of, you know, it's not just us. There's other insect companies out there. There's been a ton in the media around it. I've just been so impressed about how quickly this whole trend has spread.
What decisions did you guys make early on that you believe have really paid off?
So a piece of advice that we always give to everyone, and I talked about this a little bit earlier, was basically testing whatever your idea is on everyone. So I think what a lot of people think when they start something is like, oh, I've got a super, super secret idea and I don't want to tell anyone because I'm worried they're going to steal it. And we kind of had that worry early on too, like, oh no. But I think what we did well was that we went out and we tested it on everyone. And because we tested it on everyone and talked to everyone about it, we just had a lot more of an idea of what was working and what wasn't, and things to change or ways to think about it that we just never would have if it was just within our team or, you know, a couple of close advisors. So yeah, I would highly advise people to find the kinds of communities that we had. Finding that community that believes in you, wants to help, you can test whatever kind of product you have, early prototypes on it. I think that's really what has been one of the most crucial parts of the success of our business.
What impact has e-commerce had on Chirps?
I think what's really cool about the day and age that we live in is that for the first time ever, you can make a product and get distribution kind of anywhere in the country. So, for example, if you live in a part of the United States where you can't find our chirps in your local grocery store, you can buy them on our website or on Amazon. And that's amazing. And that's been a huge part of what we did. So, you know, early on, we actually got our start from e-commerce, right? From Kickstarter, our initial first believers. Since then, you know, we still do a lot of business on our website, online, Amazon. So, you know, e-commerce has been kind of the start and a bit of a backbone to a lot of what we do.
Where do you hope to see chirps in 5 to 10 years?
Yes. So right now, what we do is that we work with cricket protein powder and we put that into our chips, and we also sell chocolate chip cookies and the flour. And that's kind of like stage one, where you're using crickets as a whey or soy replacement, kind of as an ingredient in food. And I think that's really exciting. Crickets are much more sustainable than like a whey or a soy, and it's a great introduction to start getting people eating them. But kind of in 5 to 10 years, what I can start seeing is insects in a lot more products. So the idea would be that you could walk into your local grocery store and you could, first of all, like see cricket flour as an ingredient on like cereal or in other snacks, but also starting to see insects as like a meat or egg replacement. So what's cool about insects is that we've been trying to make plants taste like animals for a really long time, right? All the veggie burgers, but it's pretty hard because plants and animals are pretty different. But insects are a lot closer than, you know, soy to a cow or a pig. And you can actually make really delicious meat replacements. And so the idea would be that you could go into a local restaurant or grocery store and get a beef burger or a chicken burger or what might be called like an insect burger or an ento burger. And so that's what I'm really excited about, because there's over 2,000 varieties of edible insects eaten all over the world, eaten as delicacies. And it's kind of this whole undiscovered food group. And so the vision for the next 5 to 10 years is insects going mainstream, insects being just another part of what we eat. And I'm really excited to see that happen and to be part of that movement.
Are there any other insects that would potentially be tasty snacks that are on your radar?
So I mentioned there's over 2,000 varieties of edible insects eaten all over the world. I mean, I would love to work with more insects. Ants, for example, when they bite you, they hurt, partly because they've got a bit of an acid in their bite. But when you eat them, they have this delicious sour taste. So some of the top chefs have been working with ants, for example, on salads at like Noma and other restaurants. In Europe, they've been working more with mealworms. Mealworms have a nasty name, right? But they have a consistency that's a bit like beef. So they've been making some meat replacements there already and making powder out of them as well. I'm really excited. There's a lot more insects that have potential, but we just need some more insect farmers out there to start growing them.
Laura, what are you excited about right now?
What's pretty cool is right now, around the holidays, we come out with some specific different products that we don't normally. So right now, for example, we have our cookie mixes. You can make your own cricket cookies, bring them to holiday parties, that kind of thing. We've also been doing some other promotions this month with other local cookie companies, a cupcake company. So yeah, check out our website, see what's been going on. And we're excited to start doing some other products that are maybe just beyond our chips themselves.
During this holiday season, consider spicing things up a bit by taking chirps, chips, or cookies to your holiday get-togethers. Chances are, no one would even notice they were eating crickets. Right now, you can find chirps products at select grocers nationwide, on Amazon, and on the chirps website. You can learn more about chirps at chirpschips.com. That is all for episode 9. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you back here for episode 10. Subscribe and leave your review on iTunes, and you can also listen on Stitcher or at podomatic.com.